Hello and welcome to Front and Nationwide. This is the Athletics dedicated Blue Jackets podcast. Aaron Portzine with you on a Wednesday afternoon. Thanks for being with us today. The Blue Jackets have hit the All-Star break and their bye week, so they've got some time off. They don't play again until February 10th. It'll be Hockey is for Everyone night at Nationwide Arena when the Maple Leafs come to town. Thanks for being with us. We can talk about all manner of things. I just got back from a great trip to Moose Jaw in Regina to see some Blue Jackets prospects. We can chat about this, but let's get to some breaking news first on the Blue Jackets. It came out this morning, the Blue Jackets announcing that Gus Nyquist does not need shoulder surgery, left shoulder, injured on a inadvertent collision with Magnus Puljujärvi last Wednesday in an overtime win over Edmonton. Good news, doesn't need surgery. Bad news, Nyquist was likely to be a trade chip for the Blue Jackets by the March 3 trade deadline. Interesting speaking to Gus on his way to Florida, as many of the players are, Florida and points beyond for this break. He's not looking at this like his season is over. Now, that doesn't necessarily mean that he'll play for the Blue Jackets again. It just means that he thinks he can play again this season, meaning late in the regular season and in the playoffs. So if you think back a couple of years, the Blue Jackets traded Riley Nash, who had a sprained knee, traded him to Toronto for a conditional seventh-round pick. I think you could see a very similar situation for Nyquist. I think he gets more than a seventh, but I would be shocked if it didn't have conditions attached to it. In other words, if Nyquist plays this many games, then the draft pick gets better. If he contributes this much, the draft pick is better. It's not ideal. This is not ideal for Gus Nyquist or the Blue Jackets, but it could be worse. If you'd like to make a comment or ask a question, by all means, step up on stage and we'll try to bring you in, or you can post them on the chat list. A few comments on there already. So that's not ideal. The Blue Jackets making two minor moves today, Bernie and Bjork, defensemen, both sent to Cleveland for the All-Star break. So they do not get a break. They do not get a vacation in the sun just yet as young players. So again, Blue Jackets lose last night to Washington 4-3 in overtime. I got to say, I thought that was going to be a rough game for them. These games can be difficult anyways. Forget the season they're having. These games right before the All-Star break can be tough. Some guys have one foot in the sand, if you will. And I didn't see that last night. I thought they played pretty well. Andrew Peak has had kind of a rough season, but he scores a big early goal to kind of stop the bleeding. It was 2-0 Caps in the first period, and that kind of made it a game again. And then they just kind of kept plucking away. And Gaudreau scores in the third to tie it. You know, whatever what happens when you get to overtime, who knows? They lose 4-3. Not a great point, not an awful point. This team's desperate for any points they can get. And they remain in last place of the overall standing. So those of you who are fully committed to Connor Bedard and the chances of drafting him, the best chances possible, that is still remains much intact. I had a chance to meet up with Bedard, chat with him before a game, watch him play a game in Regina. Hoping to write about that. Boy, was that an atmosphere. I got to say, a pretty impressive young man. Engaging, conversational, does not struggle as some other hockey players have to be engaging and show personality. He was all of those things. And all accounts are, he's a very well-balanced young man. So we can talk Bedard. We can talk about the prospects that I had the great fortune of seeing, Denton Matejchuk and Martin Rysavy and Moose Jaw and Stanislav Svozil, who I got to say, he's one of the few guys on that Regina team that can think the game the way Bedard does. And that is you might think it's easy to play with a guy like Bedard, but I don't know that it's as, I don't think a lot of people can do it. Think the game that fast. And Svozil is one of them. The question with him is, can he get big enough and strong enough to play in the NHL? He's a late bloomer physically. He's got the frame. He's just not there strength and conditioning wise yet. So he is going to turn pro he's going to turn pro after the season. Is that the NHL next year? There's a chance. Is that Cleveland? I think that's possible. He could be brought along like Juracek is being brought along this year. So let's get into it. We can take any of your questions, step up to the stage, text your message in as many of you have, and we can get into whatever you want to get into. We have got Paul B. on the line. Paul B., thanks for joining us on Front and Nationwide. Go ahead, sir.
Hey, Porty, how's it going?
Good, Paul. How are you?
I'm good. I'm good. So, obviously, we've heard a lot about Connor Bedard all year long. Well, gosh, last 2 or 3 years. And if you had only heard it and never saw the guy, you could think he's the second coming of Wayne Gretzky from some of the things people are saying. So, you got to meet him. You got to finally see him in person. Did he meet your expectations, exceed your expectations, and kind of what was your overall feeling of him?
Well, thanks. Great question. It's hard to, if you're Connor Bedard, I think the pressure of his situation is that it's almost impossible to exceed people's expectations based upon what people are saying about you. And yet, I think there were aspects of watching him play that were a little bit different than I had anticipated. First of all, the rink is just a buzz. And you can feel it when he comes over the boards. You can feel it in the crowd. Can feel the anticipation when the puck is on a stick. It's electrifying. And the thing that blew me away is how much time he spent trying to bring other guys. It's not a very good Regina Pats team. It's how much time he took trying to bring other guys in, how he seemed intent on incorporating guys who just frankly weren't up to thinking the game at that level. I mentioned how Svozil can. I think he could have shot the puck 5 or 6 more times, and I don't think it was him not recognizing that. I think it was him trying to set up his teammates. He made one play on a power play, his first goal. He had a hat trick. He had a hat trick by the midpoint of the second period, where he faked a shot, and I didn't feel bad because he was a prideful athlete making a full-on effort play. But the Medicine Hat defenseman bit big time and just wiped out at center ice, and Bedard stepped around him and just went bar down with a wrister from the slot that was pretty awesome. It's all there. He had a hat trick. He had a primary assist on the other goal. The team only scored 4 goals all night. They blew a 4-1 lead and lost 6-4. But I get what the excitement is, because it is special to it's special. And it's special in the junior ranks for sure. But it's not. I saw Gilbert Brule play for the Vancouver Giants, and he dominated at that level too. The way that he dominated those physically, like, he blew people up at 5'10", 176 pounds. But Bedard's not doing that stuff. He's dominating a way that it'll be more difficult in the NHL for sure. But there's no reason to think that it can't continue or won't continue. He is an exceptional talent. I want to see Fantilli. The one thing I think everybody needs to be careful about is there's going to be great disappointment for teams that don't get Bedard, and only one team's going to get him. Adam Fantilli's a hell of a prospect, too. Leo Carlson's a hell of a prospect, too. Everybody wants Bedard. And that's fine. That's fine. But it's a great draft, and it's going to be super exciting to see how this all plays out.
Yeah, the one thing with Fantilli, and I kind of got it from when I read your article about Matejczuk and how he's kind of has a little bit of a chip growing on his shoulder from getting snubbed from Team Canada. I got a feeling Fantilli, you know, all the expectations are going to be on Connor, and he's got to deal with that. But I think there's going to be some pissed off nature to Fantilli to be looked at as a consolation prize this year.
Yeah, I mean, you'd like it. You'd like that, right? I mean, that would be. I think that's. I tell you, the GM that gets Fantilli, of course, is going to say, "Geez, one more pick, and we could have had that with our kid." They'll never say that publicly, but privately, they'll be delighted to get Fantilli because he is for sure. He projects, and there's nothing for sure. I shouldn't say that way. He is a 6'2" centerman. He is a number one centerman projected, and I think most people are fairly certain that that's what he's going to turn out to be. Any draft where you land a number one center in the NHL, they are so rare, is a great draft. And so keep that in mind should the ping pong balls not bounce the Blue Jackets' way when the lottery is held. God, I wish we had a date on the lottery. We could do a countdown to the lottery yet. The league hasn't announced exactly when that'll be yet, but that's kind of the everything.
Hey, speaking of the lottery, I don't know if you know this or not. Do you know why they don't hold it live like the NBA? Is there a reason? They just kind of come out with the note cards, and it's like, okay, I have to trust that's correct. Not to get all conspiracy theory, but it's kind of weird.
Well, there are plenty of conspiracy theories surrounding the NHL draft, which I've always thought is sort of interesting. I'd love to be a witness. I think there should be a neutral party media member witness to the process every year, and I'll be making that pitch to the league, but I don't expect them to agree, but it'd be cool if they did. I think it'd be a neat story. But Paul, thanks for the question, man.
Appreciate it.
I appreciate it. Thank you. We're going to go to Philip G now. Philip.
Hi, can you hear me?
G. I got you. What's going on, man?
I have two questions, and I just got in here, so I apologize if you've answered either of them already. But first question is, obviously, you know, Nyquist is injured, but is he injured to the degree where he's going to be out for all of the regular season and the playoffs? Or is it a situation where the Blue Jackets might LTIR him, trade that LTIR contract to a team, and that becomes actually preferable because he'll be activated after the end of the season when they're in the playoffs and no cap issues whatsoever?
Yeah, so he is injured. He does not require surgery. The best way, I think, to look at this, the safest way to look at this, not 100% locked down that it's this clearly divided this way, but if he's traded, he could play again this season late in the regular season and in the playoffs, or just in the playoffs. If he's not traded, if he remains with Columbus, my sense is he's done for the season because he's a UFA. There's not much benefit to playing these games in a lost season late. If you think back a couple of years ago when he had the surgery in November, he could have technically, he was cleared to play late in that 2021 season, which was a lost cause, though not to this extent. And the decision wisely was made to just keep him out. What's the upside here? And I think they would go down that path again. I think there's a chance that Gus Nyquist re-signs in Columbus, whether he's traded or not. I think he really likes it here. I think the club is wary about just letting every veteran leave. I think they like the example of a Gus Nyquist in the room. So I the idea is that if he continues to improve, then he could be traded for a team that's looking for secondary scoring in the playoffs. So that's how I would answer that.
All right, and the second question is, and I'm sure you probably got asked this already, but you did mention in your Sunday mailbag that there was the, you know, rumors about Elvis's work ethic. Can you elaborate a little bit on that and explain where that's coming from? Or at least, like, is that your idea? Is that something you've heard? Is that just, like, a potential concern within the organization that isn't, like, substantiated? What's the level here?
Yeah, so, well, it's not rumors per se. It's not people whispering it. It is from within the club, multiple points within the club, that typically when a starting goaltender loses his job to somebody else, or when somebody else, the other goalie, starts to get the majority of starts, the impetus is on that goalie to work harder to get it back, not just to bide their time and wait for their turn, but to reclaim their position. And it's been made clear, I'm sure it's been made clear to Elvis, if it's made it out of the building, that expectation is in place for him, that they want him to start working harder, that he should not be as okay with not starting as much as he may appear to be. They want more from him. It's not the end of the world. It's not Elvis is lazy. This is what you need to be doing to get back. This is the expectation of any player on the ice. Everyone needs a kick in the backside sometimes. And I think that was the intent of those who have expressed that regarding Elvis, that there's frustration this year. He's not had a great year, but it's still not enough to say, not my year. Things just aren't going well. They need more and they want more. And so that's what that is. That's not a rumor. It's not something I've made up. It's not something I feel. I don't see what everybody else sees from inside the team in terms of who's doing this and who's doing what. But there are things that practices where it's been pointed out that more could be done by Elvis in this situation. So it's a wake-up call. I hope he takes it as such.
Thank you.
Yeah, thanks for the question.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 U.S.-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service anytime. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
Okay, we're going to go to some... GR pops up, we'll slide back over. We're going to go to some questions that have been posted the old-fashioned way, if you will. Daniel K says, thanks for doing this. What do you think the ceiling is for Marchenko? He's looking very solid early on. I think this kid, Marchenko's got a huge ceiling. And I've heard nothing but really good things about him for a couple of years. This is why we kind of, at The Athletic, kind of were pretty aggressive in hounding the Marchenko story even before he got here. Because there's such upside there. This is a guy, he would have played for Russia in the Olympics last year. Think about that. That is no small feat. But if not for his punishment by the Russian Federation for refusing to sign a contract, for wanting to come to the NHL, he has been a revelation. He's an interesting guy to watch. He's got sufficient speed. He's got a big frame. Kekalainen's really excited to see the frame fill out, and really excited by the fact that Marchenko seems completely in agreement with them that he needs to muscle up and get bigger. That will allow him to do more things. But the kid has been a revelation. 13 goals in only 28 games. He's we talked about the NHL record. Look at the Sunday A gathering, there's a note in there about his place in history. It's crazy he doesn't have an assist yet, because he does have the puck quite a bit. He looks like a top six winger to me. I think he could be a top line winger in the right situation. And you give this club a center or two, they don't have a top six center on the roster right now. Think about that. That's part of the struggles that they're having right now. You give this team two NHL top six centers. One by the draft, one by perhaps Cole Sillinger's emergence. That's the hope. Then you've really got something. And I think Marchenko could play in that top role if the center is right. I'm very excited about his future. And I think the guys in the room really, really like this kid. He is absolutely effervescent in his attitude. So all good signs. Steve G says, fast forward to the draft lottery. Oh, Steve, wouldn't that be wonderful if we could, in fact, do that, as most of us are already doing. He says, if you're guaranteed the number two pick, Fantilli, do you take it or do you roll the dice and gamble on the upside of Bedard? Honestly, I'd be torn, so interested in your thoughts. Now, what is the punishment if you... So I guess I'm not quite clear. I'd be thrilled to have Fantilli, honestly. What am I risking by rolling the dice and gambling for Bedard? Because if I know I've got Fantilli and the option is to lose both the Fantilli pick in an attempt to get to Bedard, then I'd have to think long and hard about this. But listen, Fantilli's going to be a hell of a player. And again, I think what we in the media have to be careful here, because everybody's excited to tell a Bedard story. Everybody's excited to see this kid play. It's only going to be natural that teams are going to be absolutely crestfallen if they don't win the lottery. But if you get the number two pick, you should be absolutely delighted to have an opportunity to draft a player like Adam Fantilli. What he's doing in college hockey right now just doesn't happen very often. It's special. And he's 18. This is not a kid that's gone 2 years to the USHL so that he's better able to play in the NCAA. He's legit doing this as an 18-year-old freshman. So respect to him. He's going to have, by all accounts, a remarkable NHL career. And so, cry not if you pick number two instead of number one. I think there's a breaking point, honestly, for people. Teams are excited to get Carlson. I think Carlson's probably a little more of a wait for it guy than Fantilli and Bedard is. My sense is that Fantilli and Bedard will both be NHL guys next year. It feels like Carlson's maybe a year away, but that could change for sure. That could not be the case. Picking Michkov at four, if that's where he goes, he might not, because of the he's got three more years in Russia after this. So he's a guy that could drop for me, not based on his talent, but based on the contractual obligations. But if you're picking one or two, spare me your tears. The suffering you've gone through this season was worth it. That's what I would say to that. Jonathan C says, since we have so many injured, are we able to weaponize our cap space this season to get extra picks and prospects? That's something I would look for at the March 3 trade deadline. Yes, the Blue Jackets could acquire teams that are wanting to add pieces and have no cap room. Although, keep in mind, everything is prorated. It's prorated, so... whatever a player's contract is, it's the percentage of the season that's left becomes the percentage of the contract that is left. And so these $6 million contracts are really worth about $1.5 million the rest of the way. But if a team wants to add somebody with existing contract beyond this season, and they know they're going to have problems in the future, and they've got a player they'd like to part ways with, the Blue Jackets could help facilitate that for sure. Something to look for. Maybe another way that Jarmo Kekalainen can turn a negative into a positive. This question, I don't see a name attached to it. Two questions. What can be done to stop teams from pushing KJ around so much? Well, I mean, part of what's going to happen is he's going to bulk up and push back. He's never going to be a big guy, though. So people are going to be physical on him the rest of his career. I think he handles it actually pretty well. It is imperative. And it bothered me. And I think I spoke about it on the trade deadline or in the podcast a couple weeks ago. Sorry. Stop looking at Twitter. when Svechnikov fired a puck into an empty net against the Blue Jackets, and there was no physical response to that. It bothered me, because there's always a physical response to that. There has to be. Last night, I think it was Kent Johnson who poked at the goalie's glove, which you know is going to get some pushback. And the Capitals just went in on him in a way that is, that's kind of what good teams do in this league. And it just kind of reinforced how much the Blue Jackets didn't respond to the Svechnikov thing. Anyways, it still bothers me. I didn't think Johnson should have gotten a slash in there. I didn't think he slashed anybody, but I thought that was worth noting. The second part of this question is the third line is like the doghouse line. Can they possibly improve as a unit, or is Brad Larsen just dumping people there? This question is from Morgan. Well, Morgan, it depends on what you're calling the third line last night. It is strange, isn't it? We were talking last night how one game Roslovic is on the top line between line A and Gaudreau, and the next night he's on the third line, and you don't really see him much or hear from him much. I didn't really notice him at all last night. He's one of those guys that I didn't notice really in any capacity last night. And there was a line, I think it was a few weeks ago, where it was Bedard. I think it might have been Bedard, Roslovic, and Marchenko. And it was like, well, that's the line that they're going to sit when the going gets rough. Last night it was Foodie with Roslovic and Bemstrom. You know, Bemstrom had an unreal look early and chunked it. And that's it. Game over there. I didn't really notice him after that, but it is easier for a coach to roll to sit an entire line rather than to jumble everything up and mix things up again. So I think subconsciously, if nothing else, that's kind of how it works sometimes. He likes Gaudreau and line A with Jenner. He loves Corrali with Robinson and Olivier. And, you know, the second line last night is kind of the kid line with Sillinger flanked by Marchenko and Johnson. Marchenko and Johnson both having really good rookie years. It's easier to just sit a line. And we've seen it many, many times this season. Next question is from Sean P. Do you think Bedard is an NHL center or a wing? I mean, the honest answer is I am not a scout. I don't know. But I think all of this talk about him not being a center is based purely on his size. There have been 5'10" centers in this league. There will be in the future. I don't know why he can't be one of them. As much as he has the puck, as much as he loves to skate in center ice, I think you can put him on the wing. Think of Patrick Kane. There's a lot of times Patrick Kane, when he has the puck, plays like a centerman, both in his positioning, center ice, and certainly in his playmaking. Yeah, I'm not going to certainly have a meaningful opinion on which of those he is. I have heard the concern, but I think it's only the fact that he's 5'9.5" or 5'10". I can tell you this. I shook hands with the guy and was shocked at how firm the handshake is. The kid's legs are huge. This is not a kid that's going to get pushed around in the NHL. He's only 17 years old, but he is not a lightweight. He's kind of stocky, not out of shape at all, but muscular already. And you hear about his work habits behind the scenes, and you can see it. He works harder than anybody else, continues to work harder, and he is driven at a level that the great ones are usually driven at. So I think he can be whatever he wants to be, and I think that's going to be a center. Austin H. says, this might be a difficult question to answer, but I will try to ask it. All right. This is an open office policy here, Austin. Have at it. I've always found it difficult, Austin says, to actually get a good understanding of how good our development players are doing. Obviously, local reporters will cover them and say, there's always an upside. I don't see this ever on a national scale. It almost seems like a chore to find national media discussing our prospects. This leads me to doubt how good our prospects will be going on 15 plus years now of this. So I'm not sure where, Austin, where you're looking or not looking. And I try not to let what I've read in other places sort of impact what I am seeing. I'm not sure if you can fully do that or not, but just we have two guys at the Athletics, Scott Wheeler and Corey Prahman, who have certainly free range to write and to critique these players as they see fit. And they've written a lot about some of the Blue Jackets prospects. They like Svozil. They like Matejchuk. I think they've been fair with Jordan Dumais, that speaking especially Wheeler about the incredible offensive exploits he's had in the queue, but also the concerns about his skating and his size. So without giving away too much, Scott Wheeler has done his complete rankings of every NHL team and their prospects. And I think, let me look here, because he had one out today. One comes out almost every day without exception. And, yeah, okay, here's Wheeler from today. This is great radio, isn't it? He's got Arizona today, published 4 hours ago, at number 9. Okay, so there are 8 teams to go in the league, and the Blue Jackets have not gone yet. I don't know where they land this year, but I know it's quite high. And both Wheeler and Prahman are quite high on the Blue Jackets prospects, the players that will be coming washing ashore here in a couple of years. So I'm not sure where you're reading it. I don't want to discount another place you're reading it if they disagree. This is not an exact science. These are prospects, not for sure. But I think I don't think anything I wrote in the Matejchuk was contrary to what's been opined by others. He's seen as a pretty darn good prospect. I'll say this, I've seen people describe his skating and his playing style as Makar-like. I didn't see that. I've never seen that, not in Traverse City, not in preseason games, and not in Moose Jaw. I mean, that's getting a little, that's a very high bar. Cale Makar is maybe the best defenseman in the league right now. I don't think he moves like Makar. I think, just to give you an example, I think Matejchuk is a fluid skater, is a smooth skater, and I think he's an offensive participant. But what I saw just in 2 games at Moose Jaw is that he's more of a participant in the offensive play than a creator of it. I think he's going to be a solid 3-4 defenseman in the NHL. He's a left side guy. I think he plays on the right side in Moose Jaw, by the way. I think Svozil has the potential to be, I think you're looking at a defensive pair in Columbus within 2 years, maybe 3 years, of Werenski, Yiracek, Matejchuk, Svozil. And I'm not sure what the third pair looks like. But that's the pedigree of these players. And maybe it doesn't come to be, but I don't think I'm overstating it. I think that's all very realistic, and I think it runs in line with what others have said about those players. This is another continuing from Austin H., I believe. Additionally, national media will swoon over seemingly average players on other teams. Simply small market versus big, very difficult to get a true grasp. Again, I'm not sure where you're reading that, Austin. You know, send me an email because I am interested. I'm not trying to discount your comment or your feelings. Send me an email at aportsline, and then last name at The Athletic, if you want to carry on further. Or send me a message on Twitter. We can do it that way too. But I'm not seeing Blue Jackets prospects being discounted or bashed by by others. Chris J says, refresh me on the lottery rules. If they lose the lottery, how far are they allowed to drop? Hope is if they do win the lottery and get Bedard, that he gets developed right away. Obviously, he'll be too good to go back to junior. Thoughts on how they would develop him. So quickly to that, you cannot drop more than two spots in the lottery. So if you finish with the worst overall record, you cannot pick any lower than three. If you finish second, four, third, fifth, and so on. Any of the teams from 1 to 11 can win the lottery, but the percentage chance of that drops as you go from 1 to 11, obviously. 12 through 16, the teams that finish 12 through 16 and don't make the playoffs, obviously, they can't win the lottery. They can only go up 10 spots. So 12 can get to 2, 13 to 3, etc. Which is why when you see the number one team having a 25.5% chance to win it, because they also get the percentage chance of the 12 through 16 teams for that first pick, because those guys can't win it. So hope that helps you there. How would they develop Bedard? Well, Bedard would be an NHL player next year, no matter where he's drafted. He goes straight to the league. He's not going back to junior. He's not going to play in the minors. He is he's an NHL talent, which is crazy. Is there any concern in the organization about how frequently Tarasov has been hurt this year? I mean, sure. Yeah, I think there's concern in a lot of different spaces. So you hope everyone's just getting it out of the way this year. I don't think it's a training issue, but who knows? The draft is filled with potential centers, Philip G. says. If Columbus gets a second first-round pick this year, could you see the organization doubling down like they did last year? Yeah. Hell yeah. Frankly, especially with the way that Cole Sillinger has played this year. Yeah, and just in a general sense, I don't think you can have too many centers. So it's easier to move a center to the wing than to put a wing to the middle. Ross G says, any chance we can get an article on Jamie Healy? Would love to hear stories he has from over the years. You know what? I love Heels. We made a note of it in the Sunday gathering. But he is, one of the rules of those guys is they're not even secrets as much, but they don't talk too much about their guys. I know some of the stories, and he's had some great players come through that room, many of whom he's still friends with, and so he, of course, he would have some great stories. But I don't think he feels comfortable sharing them, because all of that needs to be, that's the relationship that those guys need to have with their trainer, right? So maybe when a guy retires, maybe. I've wanted for years to follow the training staff around, the equipment staff around on road trips, because their job, I don't think a lot of people fully understand what those guys do and the hours that they keep. A lot of times they just end up sleeping at the rink on the road because they can't make it back to the hotel in time for meaningful sleep before the morning skate. It's crazy. Let's see here. Daniel D., are we really going to lose Gavrikov? I can't imagine this team will be competitive next year with only one true top four defenseman, that being Werenski. I mean, they're not going to lose Gavrikov. They're going to trade him. He will be gone, I guess is your point. And that is right. If they don't get him signed, it'd be great if they could keep him. I don't think they want to overpay for him. I think they've got an idea of what they think is fair, and they don't want to go too out of whack with that, especially with the players coming. If they let him go, if they trade him, they'll have to do something this summer to improve the top four. They're going to need a bridge to the next wave here. Iracek, I think everyone's hopeful he's going to be ready. But he, you know, there's going to be some struggles there too early in his career. So they've got to bulk up that back end. And in Elvis's defense and these goalies' defense, like, nobody's going to look good in that position until the defense and gets better. And that includes the forwards playing defense too. This was a disastrous defensive team early in the season. And it's got to get better, especially on defense, but also with the forwards checking and defending. So that needs to be a focus this offseason. Let's bring Jonathan B. back in on stage. Jonathan, you there?
Yep, I'm here, Porty. The app kind of wigged out on me for a minute.
No worries.
So I think the majority of Jackets fans are kind of forward-looking right now. Like, this season is kind of hard to swallow. I was actually washing my Blue Jackets whiskey glass earlier, and it's getting a lot of use. Nice. But I keep thinking about who the core of this team is, and more importantly, who the front office sees the core of this team is, and like, who's going to be here and producing and kind of foundational in the next 3 to 5 years. And I think some of the answers are obvious, but I keep looking at Patrick Laine and just the way he plays, his style of play. You know, he goes on heaters and looks unbeatable, and then he looks like a complete passenger for 10 to 15 games. And I'm wondering if he's going to be the right fit for a core. And if not, like, what is his perception around the league at this time? Like, he's on a $7 million contract, and he may not score 20 goals this year. And that feels like a pretty big red flag for me right now.
Yeah, he is an interesting and concerning player. And I think you talk to people within the Blue Jackets and around the league, there's just a million different opinions on him. Still, he's a very divisive player for a lot of people. It occurs to me, and this has been said before he even got here, that he's not the guy you want to build your team around. He's the piece you put on top of your team when you think your team is finished to get over the hump. And it kind of looks that way. It's a weird thing to say, but the longer you watch him, I think the more you kind of see what people mean by that. To build your team around him and to see him as a foundational piece, he may just be too inconsistent for that. And, you know, I don't think he's the one trick pony that everybody says he is, or maybe the best way to say it is, I think he's come a long way. He's not as bad this year as he was 2 years ago, when it was just really apparent that he was not having a good season and this was not going well at all. And he was pretty good last year at times when he got going. But his calling card in this league is scoring goals. He is to be an elite goal scorer. And you put up with some of the other stuff because he has that rare ability to do what so few people can do, which is to put the puck in the basket. He should not be tied with Boone Jenner for goals on this team this year. 36 games. He's missed a lot of games again. He's at 14 goals. He's not the elite goal scorer. He hasn't been since he's been here. And so do they continue to hope to make it work? Is this a player they would move? Do they feel like they need to move him to get sort of the team that they want to have, a direct sort of honest, straight ahead hockey team that you know what you're going to get most nights? I don't rule that out, I guess. I don't think he's an easy player to trade now either, though, with that kind of money. I wouldn't be surprised if the Blue Jackets really made some big moves this summer, some surprising moves of players that people think, right, as of today, are foundational guys. Jack Roslovic has 4 goals in 48 games this year. That's crazy. That's crazy. And he's been given every opportunity to be a top six center and can't nail it down. Could nail it down in Winnipeg, hasn't nailed it down here. How long do you wait on these guys? Now, part of it is these are what you have left for having traded Pierre-Luc Dubois. And you better believe GM's thinking that sense too. Like, we gave up Dubois for these guys. This has to work. This is a weird team, and it's not a team that it's a flawed team, even when they're healthy. Like, they have no centers. They have okay wingers, but some major inconsistency there. And their top four defense is incredibly unsettled, even when healthy. Now, I mean, I think he had two out of four spots were sort of settled with Werenski and Gavrikov. Now you take Werenski out of the mix, you've got one top four proven centerman. And, you know, it's easy to pile on Gudbranson as a bad signing. That's been said many times. Look at how Gudbranson's being handled this year versus how you ideally want to play him. He's over 20 minutes a night. And that just doesn't fly. I think the only guy that averages more time defensively than him is Gavrikov this year. And Gudbranson should be a third pair guy playing 15 to 17 minutes a night, not at 22, 24. He let him a nice time last night. It's no slam on him. He's giving the team what the best that he can, but he's being used in a capacity that's way beyond what's probably reasonable. And I think you're seeing that all over their lineup. Line A should be the leader on this team offensively, the leading goal scorer, and it shouldn't be close, but he's not. And it is close. He's not the explosive NHL goal scorer that he has been billed to be. In fact, I think since the start of his time in Columbus, I don't know that he's even in the top 100 in the league in goal scoring, which is pretty amazing, really. Let me look here real quick and see if we can dial this up, because he's got 14 goals this year. He has, in his time in Columbus, Patrick Laine has 50 goals since the start of 2021. So if we look at that, yeah, he is 100 and he's barely in the top 100. And that is not right. That's not what he's being paid to be. So, I mean, he has 51 goals. He's 52 goals. 51 of those with Columbus. He's tied for 83rd in the league since the start of 2021. 83rd. I would not say that's elite. That's, you know, decent, but that he's expected to be elite. He's not that. So it's frustrating. And they got to decide if that's fixable or if that's something that they move on from. So I hope I didn't rattle on too long there, Jonathan.
No, I think we're kind of all in that same mind space of he's not exactly what we hoped he would be, but he's too hard to get any value for right now. And he could be that final piece that gets you over the top, but I don't think we're anywhere near that space right now. So anyway, Cordy, thanks a lot. I know we're getting up on time, but I want to thank you for everything.
Yeah, well, thanks, Jonathan. I appreciate it. And thanks, everybody, for tuning in. Appreciate it. We'll be back next week. I'm taking off. Hell, half the players are in Florida right now. I wish the same for you. Get out of here. Enjoy yourselves. 31 games to go. We can do this. And I'll talk to you next week on Front and Nationwide. Thanks, everybody. Talk to you soon. Take care.